This is IRIB English Radio.
U.S. House of Representatives is voting on a resolution that seeks immediate removal of President Trump from office. Syrian media say Israel has launched fresh airstrikes on the eastern parts of the country near the Iraqi border. Also ahead this hour, Tehran says U.S. allegations about Iran's ties with the Al-Qaeda terrorist group show the failure of Washington's maximum pressure campaign. Welcome to the program. Our top story this hour, the U.S. House of Representatives is voting on a resolution that seeks President Donald Trump's immediate removal from office. The resolution calls on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment. The article allows for unseating the president if he is deemed unfit for office. Pence, however, expressed opposition to triggering the amendment. Democrats said they will bring impeachment charges against the president as early as Wednesday if the 25th Amendment is not activated. Trump, however, has downplayed the risk of being removed from office. Take a listen.
And I'd like to say that free speech is under assault like never before. The 25th Amendment is of zero risk to me, but will come back to haunt Joe Biden and the Biden administration. As the expression goes, be careful what you wish for.
Trump also called the Democratic-led efforts to bring impeachment charges against him a witch hunt. That's a phrase that he had repeatedly used during his first impeachment. Earlier, he described the initiative by the Democrats as a dangerous move. The developments come as Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has reportedly said the president has committed impeachable offenses. Several House Republicans have also voiced support for the impeachment. Trump is accused of inciting an insurrection to overturn the result of the November presidential election. On a that House vote, I'm going to bring in Wyatt Reed, our man in Washington, D.C., who joins us via Skype out of the U.S. Capitol to talk to us a little bit more about this. From your neck of the woods, Wyatt, tell us a little bit more understanding. Everybody is waiting for Wednesday morning where you are to see how the House votes on this. How real and serious of a threat would you say this is? Bring us up to date with the atmosphere.
Well, it's certainly a greater threat than it was the last go-round, in which the impeachment vote essentially came down to party lines. This time around, there is some movement among the so-called moderate Republican wing, notably Liz Cheney, the third-in-command of House Republicans, and, of course, the daughter of Dick Cheney. She is saying, quote, "There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath to the Constitution." All well and good, of course. Meanwhile, Mike Pence has now, as you said, denounced any sort of effort and any rumors that he might be coming out on the side of impeachment seem to have been premature. He has said that he does not believe impeachment is, quote, in the best interests of our nation or consistent with our Constitution, describing this impeachment as a political game. And, of course, with so many people now dying of COVID, no real chance at a Medicare for All bill, and even Democrats like Joe Manchin, of course, essentially putting an end to talk of $2,000 stimulus checks. It makes some sense why Democrats would want to play political games, of course, in terms of policy, if they don't have to offer very much, if they can tell the American people that they are exercising this sort of demon from the White House.
Wyatt, there is something else that is going on, and you know, a lot of people may also think that perhaps this is something devised by the Democrats in order to prevent him from the possibility of being able to pardon himself for a lot of things that he might be sued later on when he is not president. To what extent do you think the Republicans, or have you seen the basically the Democrats, see this as the case?
Well, it's hard to say exactly what the Democrats are thinking. There are a number of reasons why they would be in favor of this. Of course, another one would be the idea that if Trump is successfully impeached, then it would be pretty easy to hold a vote that would subsequently prevent him from taking office again in any path. And of course, yes, this may be motivating them. He certainly has been a thorn in the side these past 4 years. But realistically, I think this is more to do with simply the maintenance of momentum, of ensuring that really that not only does Donald Trump never have a chance to come back to office, but essentially that the Democrats don't have to offer really much in the way of meaningful policy proposals if they are simply removing this as they present him, sort of existential threat to American democracy.
Yeah, it's going to be the first of its kind, a president of the U.S., the possibility of being impeached twice, that's unheard of. Many, many thanks. That's Wyatt Reed, our man in Washington, D.C., with that update. I really appreciate it, Wyatt. Have a good day. Let's just move on to another story now. The top generals of the U.S. Department of Defense have condemned the January the 6th attack on the Capitol by Donald Trump supporters. 8 members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and their chairman have, in a statement, slammed the violent raid as a direct assault on Congress and the constitutional process. Letter noted that any act to disrupt the process is not only against traditions, values, and oath, but also against the law. The statement reiterated that members of the armed services are bound to defend the Constitution. The Pentagon is deploying as many as 15,000 National Guard troops to protect President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration on January the 20th, amid fears of new violence. The U.S. Justice Department says it expects hundreds of criminal cases to be filed in connection with last week's raid on the Capitol. The acting attorney for the District of Columbia said the department has opened criminal investigations of more than 170 individuals. Michael Sherwin added that the participants in last week's riots will face charges of sedition and conspiracy punishable by law by up to 20 years in prison. Meanwhile, the FBI stressed it has also opened 165 so far, warning of many more to come. Supporters of President Donald Trump raided the Capitol building last week as Congress convened to certify Joe Biden's victory in the November presidential election. The violence led to the death of 5 people, including a law enforcement officer. Syrian media say Israel has launched fresh airstrikes on eastern parts of the country near the Iraqi border. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Damascus to get more on that story.
A state news agency reported that there was an Israeli aggression on the city of Deir al-Zor and the town of Abu Kamal, which is in Deir al-Zor countryside on the borderline with Iraq. After that, an official Syrian military source gave out a statement saying that about 1:10 a.m. Local time here in Syria, the Israeli enemy carried out airstrikes targeting Deir al-Zor and Abu Kamal, and that currently the Syrian military is assessing the results and the damage of such airstrikes without giving further details on what was exactly targeted. But definitely, since that Israel has carried out an attack, the target is definitely some kind of locations for the Syrian army troops that are located there fighting the remaining terrorist groups in that part of Syria.
Lebanese president's office says the country will file an urgent complaint with the United Nations against Israel's violations of the country's sovereignty. It urged the UN to condemn the Israeli aggression and violations of the resolution that ended the regime's 2006 war on Lebanon. In recent weeks, Israeli warplanes have been carrying out low-altitude flights over Beirut and other major cities, including on Christmas Eve. Israel has also been using the Lebanese airspace to carry out strikes in neighboring Syria. The UN interim force in Lebanon says Israeli aircraft enter the country's airspace on a daily basis. Between June and October of 2020, UNIFIL recorded a daily average of over 12 airspace violations, a significant increase from the previous 4 months. Political commentator Firas Najim says Israel's repeated violations of the Lebanese airspace and sovereignty reveal the illegitimacy of the regime.
This is the regular that we always hear on the news, and it's become a very normality situation, you know, where the Zionist regime is, you know, violating all types of international laws, breaching, you know, airspace of other countries such as Lebanon, Syria. We've seen in Christmas Eve. This really reveals the illegitimacy of the Zionist regime, that they don't care about international laws. They don't care about neighboring countries' laws or any respect of sovereignty for other countries, because they never had sovereignty themselves. They never had legitimacy. So when a person is born out of illegitimacy, they believe they can do anything. They can break every law, and that's exactly what they're doing. What they're doing is because of Trump's last days in power, and they have full control of this man. They think that by doing all these type of things, they will be able to ignite maybe a war, and then America will jump in, and possibly, you know, then Trump can extend his power and stay in power and, extend a couple of wars in the whole region. Well, I think it's too late now, to be honest with you, because they've had the green light. How much violations have they done? We see every day on TV how many kids they kill, how much journalists they kill, how much people they kidnap, how many places they demolish, how many annexations there is. Every law is broken, and there's nothing going on. The United Nations is sitting there blindly. They have these meetings. They condemn once in a while. But what are condemnations without implementations and penalizing the criminal?
Tehran says the recent U.S. accusations against Iran show Washington's frustration and the failure of its maximum pressure campaign. Iran's foreign minister spokesman said resorting to these, quote, old baseless tricks and claims will not help the U.S. repair its tarnished image. Said Khatibzadeh made the remarks in response to accusations leveled by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that Iran has ties with the Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Said Khatibzadeh said Pompeo had made the same accusations against the Islamic Republic in the past to divert attention from the real supporters of terrorism, which are Washington and its allies. The spokesman stressed that Iran has been a victim of U.S. state terrorism for years, adding that Iran has a clear record of fighting terrorist groups. Earlier, the Iranian foreign minister dismissed Pompeo's allegations as warmongering lies. Political commentator Cindy Sheehan says the Trump administration wants to leave with as much animosity toward the Middle East, especially Iran, as possible.
Pompeo has long been a warmonger, as your foreign minister pointed out, and I guess they want to leave with as much animosity towards the Middle East as possible, especially Iran. The Trump administration has spent a lot of time and energy demonizing Iran to the American public, which culminated last year, of course, with the assassination of General Soleimani. But Pompeo also redesignated Cuba as a terrorist, a major supporter of terrorism. And so I think it's just some more bombast coming from the hypocritical U.S. government. And as we know, if we can look at the past history, especially since 9/11, every action the U.S. has taken in the Middle East and around the world has actually increased animosity towards the United States. And I wouldn't call the people who are upset and angry against the United States terrorists. I would call them like freedom fighters who are protecting their own community and who rightfully and righteously want the U.S. to stop meddling in their affairs or occupying their countries.
The European Union has slammed the U.S. decision to label Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a foreign terrorist organization. A spokesman for EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell said the move could hamper UN-led efforts to reach a comprehensive solution to the Yemen conflict. He added that the designation will complicate the work of the international community on political and humanitarian fronts. The blacklisting is also feared to disrupt the delivery of international humanitarian aid to Yemen and further aggravate the country's economic crisis. Moreover, Washington's decision has drawn criticism from the UN and aid groups as well as lawmakers inside the U.S. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has also condemned the move, saying it reserves the right to respond. Now, the UK has reported its second highest number of COVID-19 fatalities on a single day, with over 1,200 new deaths as the virus continues to wreak havoc across Europe. Britain also reported over 45,000 new infections. The latest figures bring the total confirmed cases of the virus to more than 3.1 million and deaths to over 83,000. Elsewhere on the continent, the French Health Ministry reported nearly 20,000 new infections, over five times that of yesterday. So far, the virus has claimed some 70,000 lives out of more than 2.8 million cases in France. Meanwhile, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has reportedly said she expects a lockdown in her country to last until the start of April. The Dutch government also announced it would extend lockdown measures by at least 3 weeks. And EU legislators claim there is a lack of clarity and transparency surrounding the European Union's vaccine strategy. Member states in the 27-nation bloc are accused of not moving quickly enough to administer COVID-19 jabs. Jerome Hughes now reports.
As things stand, it is very unclear how many people in the EU have so far actually received a COVID-19 vaccine, how many doses are currently being sent to each of the 27 member states, and when various groups can expect to get the jab. EU lawmakers have been discussing the issue in the European Parliament.
European Union citizens have a lot less vaccines available to them than they should have. The European Commission has planned this badly. Perhaps they were too bureaucratic.
On the 15th of October last, the European Commission set out clear guidelines to encourage each government in the EU to prepare for vaccination rollout, including the need to have sufficient numbers of trained personnel.
We invite the members to reflect on making sure that the necessary infrastructure is in place, that the necessary equipment is in place, taking into account the technical specificities of the vaccines.
Despite being given 2.5 months' notice, many EU countries did not prepare. Vaccines were left in boxes instead of being put into people's arms. We have been speaking to citizens about the vaccine rollout.
Things are not that well done at the moment. I think that we lack some information about everything. People need to know.
It was too slow, but now we have vaccines, then we must quickly act.
Yeah, I think it's better to have done it safely, but I mean the price to pay is that it may take a bit longer.
More people have now been vaccinated in the UK than in all of the 27 EU member states combined.
Could we have been doing more about creating better capacity building for the manufacturing of the vaccines? And could we have done more in order to adjust the expectations from the citizens about the speediness of how we roll out these vaccines?
Some lawmakers say the credibility of the EU is being undermined by the fact that some member states, such as Germany, Denmark and Cyprus, are seeking extra vaccines outside of the European Commission's vaccine strategy. With the Pfizer, BioNTech and Moderna vaccines having already been approved for use in the EU, the European Medicines Agency is due to give the green light to a third, the AstraZeneca vaccine, on the 29th of this month. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
iRabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to iRabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, iRabbi English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, we're with you with another episode of this series. If you remember, in the previous episode we discussed Imam Khomeini's outstanding characteristics, namely his refraining from being introduced as a marja or a source of emulation by religious scholars as well as his students. And today we shall continue with the same discussion. Please stay with us. Famous tradition in seminaries was that a cleric who accepted to lead the prayer for the deceased source of emulation would be introduced as the next source of emulation. In other words, people would pay attention as to who was going to stand as the leader of the prayer for the former source of emulation. Then they would accept him as a substitute. But Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, in order not to be introduced as a source of emulation, took part only in funeral procession of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi and left the ceremony so that another cleric held the prayer. Ayatollah Muhammad Mahdi Rabbani Amlashi said in this regard, "When Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi passed away, all people wanted to see who would be the next source of emulation. We, the students of Imam Khomeini, had decided to glorify him at the funeral procession of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi to imply that the majority of the seminary students were advocates of him being a source of emulation. Thus, we were seeking to gather around him wherever he went during the ceremony and express our obedience and love to the Imam with reciting salawat. This way, we wanted to introduce him to the people, but we couldn't find him after a lot of searching." Imam Khomeini said later on, "I didn't come to the funeral procession of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi not because my health was so poor, but my refusal was because I realized that participation in the funeral had consequences and there would be raised issues in the ceremony. So I decided not to go there. Anyone who likes me, let that liking be in his heart. Let no one take a single step for me to become a chief." Another tradition for introducing a source of emulation in the seminaries was to hold mourning ceremonies for the deceased source of emulation. However, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, refused to do this as well. The Imam's younger son, late Haj Ahmad Agha Khomeini, said, "In summers, the Imam used to come to Imamzade Qasim in Tehran with his family. After the passing away of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, some of the ulama or religious scholars came to Imam Khomeini from Qom and insisted that he had to hold morning ceremony. But the imam said, "I will neither hold the ceremony nor will I take part in it, because these things mean to raise the issue of a source of emulation. I remember that even Mr. Eshraqi, the imam's son-in-law, came and said the same thing to him, but the imam did not accept." Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, had emphatically told his students not to mention his name in the gatherings and circles. Late Ayatollah Abul Qasim Khazali mentions a memory, an anecdote in this regard. After the passing away of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, people flocked to Qom from everywhere in Iran to mark him. The night that I was supposed to deliver a speech, I came to the late Imam Khomeini and asked him to tell me something. He said, "What is necessary to be said is the unity of the seminary. The unity of the seminary should be preserved. Let there be no name and hint of me." Martyred Ayatollah Mahallati, in this regard, said, "One day I took some money and I had taken as khums to the Imam Khomeini and gave it to him. The Imam advised me and said, 'Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi has passed away. Don't think that he was our sustainer, or Sheikh Abdul Karim Hayri Yazdi was our sustainer. Our sustainer is God Almighty. You should preserve the dignity of religious scholars and ulama so that people may not think that clerics are needy. Preserve the dignity of the religious scholars. You should not say the smallest phrase that implies the deficiency of religious scholars or ulama. You don't have the right to say anything to imply that you are forging a source of emulation, to say a word in my support or backbite another. You should do your duty properly to serve the people and the struggle." The late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, considered the unity and coherence of seminaries as very important. In this regard, Hujjatul Islam Ali Akbar Mas'udi says, "When Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi passed away, the Imam was very sad, but he didn't take part neither in the funeral procession nor in the mourning ceremonies for the Grand Ayatollah. When he was asked about the reason, he said, 'I think that perhaps my coming to the funeral and the memorial ceremony will divide the ranks of students. I don't want this division. I don't want this discrepancy. The great religious scholars of ulama should be in one rank too.'" Finally, Imam Khomeini held the ceremony to avoid the possible rumors that he was opposed to Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi. Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Murtazavi Langarudi mentions an anecdote in this regard. He says, "Imam Khomeini waited for all great religious scholars of ulama to hold memorial ceremonies for Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, and then he held such a ceremony himself." Dear listeners, as you see, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, attached priority to unity and solidarity of seminaries. Thus, when he realized that his refusal to hold a ceremony for Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi might undermine the unity of the seminary, he accepted to do it. Yet, even in the ceremony, he became upset when the preacher mentioned his name as the cleric who had held the ceremony. Late Ayatollah Rizwani says in this regard, "When the imam entered the ceremony, the preacher mentioned his name and said that the ceremony had been held on behalf of the imam. Upon hearing his voice, the imam summoned him and protested to him. He said, 'Till the end of this ceremony, you are not allowed to mention my name again.'"
علي حبه جنة وصحبه وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the sermons and letters and sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are discussing the 184th sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in this book. And in this sermon, Imam Ali alayhi salam is talking about the qualities of those who are pious. We reached one of those qualities, which is actually the quality of contentment, where Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Tarahu qani'atan nafsu." You will see that his soul, as his heart, is in a state of contentment. And of course, this is a very wonderful quality of a pious person, that each person needs to achieve slowly and gradually, inshallah, if he wants to truly achieve the pinnacle of piety. We were discussing about some of the narrations that Imam Ali alayhi salam and other imams and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam have mentioned regarding virtue of contentment. Of course, one of those narrations that I mentioned previously is this particular narration where Imam Ali alayhi salam says, is reported to have said, "Azra bi nafsihi man istash'ara at-tama," that one who has greed, who feels greedy, is one who has a weak character. His character has weakened, and therefore he needs to strengthen the quality of contentment.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, of course, there are many other narrations that are there. One of the other narrations that is there is where the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam have said, "Kafa bil qana'ati mulkan," that contentment is enough as a kingdom, is enough kingdom for someone. "Kafa bil qana'ati mulkan." What does this mean? This is quite a deep narration where Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to tell us that a person who is pious gets is able to own such a, you know, treasure, such a treasure that it is enough for him. He doesn't need anything after that. He's as if he's a king. Okay, he is, because he has what he wants, right? Which is the perfection of coming closer to God. That is enough. That qana'a itself brings that contentment is actually that good thing that gives him that perfection that is required. Or for example, in another narration, we have that خيار المؤمنين القانع وشراروهم الطامع. He says that the best of the believers, if you want to know which believer is a good person, which believer is not good, he's bad, because a person can be a believer, but he may have some badness in him. So, because not all believers are completely good in all fields, isn't it? Well, if you want to see that character that is really bad for a believing person, it is when a believer is greedy. A greedy believer. He is very bad. While the best of believers is one who is content. Or for example, in another narration, we have that the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam have reportedly said, La sharafa a'la min al-Islam. There is no nobility greater than that of being a Muslim. وَلَا عِزَّ أَعَزَّ مِنَ التَّقْوَى. And there is no, greatness or honor bigger or greater than the honor of being pious. وَلَا مَعْقَلَ أَحْسَنَ مِنَ الْوَرَى. And of course, he goes on and goes on. Inshallah, we will continue this narration after the break.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So the Imam continues in the narration after saying, "La azza azza, la azza azza min al-taqwa." That there is no honor greater than the honor of piety. And then he says, "La ma'qala ahsana min al-wara." There is no safe haven better than the safe haven of staying away from evil deeds completely, even from those that are doubtful. So that's a very good safe haven, because when you know that I will stay away even from that which is doubtful, when I doubt something is not good, I will stay away from that. وَلَا شَفِيعَ أَنْجَحَ مِنَ التَّوْبَةِ. And there is no intercessor more that can make you more successful than the intercession of repentance and asking for forgiveness. La kanza aghna min al qana'a. There is no treasure which is richer than the treasure of contentment. So this was the actual place that I wanted to discuss about, that the one, the greatest of treasures, is that treasure of contentment. And as I mentioned before, why is it such a great treasure? It's because it is that thing that truly causes a person to become perfect. The perfection of a human becomes perfect. I mean, that is the thing that actually is that richness. What does richness help you? Richness is when you have something that is truly there, truly perfect, truly good. So beyond these perfections of the soul, the other material things are not of true intrinsic value unless they are at the service of the soul and the heart. And that is why we say that the person who has reached a level whereby he is happy with what he has materially, with the decisions of God in all senses, legislatively and ontologically, he has reached that state whereby he has that goodness that is required for him to become perfect, and therefore it is the richest of things. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بال مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد ممجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
House Democrats introduced an article of impeachment against President Donald Trump on Monday, 11th of January, for his role in inflaming a mob that attacked the Capitol, scheduling a Wednesday, 13th of January, vote to charge the president with inciting violence against the government of the United States, if Vice President Mike Pence refused to strip him of power first. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Nicholas Fandos, with contributions from reporters Katie Edmondson, Luke Broadwater, Emily Cochran, and Zolan Cano-Youngs. The piece is titled, House Sets Impeachment Vote to Charge Trump with Incitement. Stay with us for more. House Democrats introduced an article of impeachment against President Donald Trump on Monday, 11th of January, for his role in inflaming a mob that attacked the Capitol, scheduling a Wednesday, 13th of January, vote to charge the president with inciting violence against the government of the United States, if Vice President Mike Pence refused to strip him of power first. Moving with exceptional speed, top House leaders began summoning lawmakers still stunned by the attack back in Washington, promising the protection of National Guard troops and federal air marshal escorts after last week's stunning security failures. They returned set up a high-stakes 24-hour standoff between the two branches of the American government. As the impeachment drive proceeded, federal law enforcement authorities accelerated efforts to fortify the Capitol building ahead of President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s inauguration on 20th of January. The authorities announced plans to deploy up to 15,000 National Guard troops and set up a multi-layered buffer zone with checkpoints around the building by Wednesday, just as lawmakers are to debate and vote on impeaching Donald Trump. Federal authorities also said they were bracing for a wave of armed protests in all 50 state capitals and Washington in the days leading up to the inauguration. "I'm not afraid of taking the oath outside," Joe Biden said on Monday, referring to a swearing-in scheduled to take place on a platform on the west side of the Capitol, in the very spot where rioters marauded last week beating police officers and vandalizing the building. Joe Biden signaled more clearly than before that he would not stand in the way of the impeachment proceeding, telling reporters in Newark, Delaware, that his primary focus was trying to minimize the effect an all-consuming trial in the Senate might have on his first days in office. He said he had consulted with lawmakers about the possibility they could bifurcate the proceedings in the Senate, such that half of each day would be spent on the trial and half on confirmation of his cabinet and other nominees. In the House of Representatives, a vote was scheduled for Tuesday evening to first formally call on Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment. Republicans had objected on Monday to unanimously passing the resolution which asked the Vice President Mike Pence to declare President Donald J. Trump incapable of executing the duties of his office and to immediately exercise powers as acting president. The House is slated to begin debate on the impeachment resolution on Wednesday morning, 13th of January, marching towards a vote late in the day unless Mike Pence intervenes beforehand. The president's threat to America is urgent and so too will be our action, Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California said, outlining a timetable that will most likely leave Donald Trump impeached 1 week to the day after he encouraged his supporters to march to the Capitol building as lawmakers met to formalize Joe Biden's victory. Donald Trump met with Vice President Mike Pence on Monday for about an hour in the Oval Office, the first time since their falling out last week over the president's effort to overturn the election and a mob assault on the Capitol building that also put Mike Pence in danger. A Trump administration official who declined to be identified speaking about the delegate situation said the two had a good conversation but would not say whether the issue of the 25th Amendment had been discussed. The vice president had already indicated that he was unlikely to act to force the president aside, and no one in either party expected Donald Trump to step down voluntarily. With that in mind, Democrats had already begun preparing a lengthier impeachment report documenting the president's actions and the destruction that followed to accompany their charge. They were confident they had the votes to make Donald Trump the first president ever to be impeached twice. The impeachment article invoked the 14th Amendment, the post-Civil War era addition to the Constitution that prohibits anyone who engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States from holding future office. Lawmakers also cited specific language from Donald Trump's speech last Wednesday, riling up the crowd, quoting him saying, "If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore." The Republican Party was fracturing over the coming debate, as some agreed with Democrats that Donald Trump should be removed, and many others were standing behind the president and his legions of loyal voters. They were also fighting among themselves, with many Republicans furious over what took place a week ago, and blaming their own colleagues and leaders for having contributed to the combustible atmosphere that allowed a pro-Trump rally to morph into a deadly siege of the Capitol building. Unlike Donald Trump's first impeachment in 2019, few Republicans were willing to muster a defense of Trump's actions, and Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the top House Republican, privately told his conference that the president deserved some blame for the violence, according to two people familiar with his remarks. Representative Kevin McCarthy remained personally opposed to impeachment and tried to hold his conference together during a lengthy call on Monday afternoon. But as many as a dozen Republicans were said to be considering joining Democrats to impeach, including Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, the number 3 House Republican. "It's something we're strongly considering at this point," said Representative Peter Meyer, a freshman Republican from Michigan, told a Fox affiliate in his home state. I think what we saw last Wednesday left the president unfit for office. Donald Trump gave his party little direction or reason to rally around him. Ensconced at the White House and barred from Twitter, he offered no defense of himself or the armed assailants who overtook the Capitol building, endangering the lives of congressional leaders, their staffers, and his own vice president. Meanwhile, Chad Wolf, the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, became the latest cabinet official to resign in the aftermath of the Capitol riot, stepping down just 9 days before he was expected to help coordinate the security at the inauguration on 20th of January. If Donald Trump is impeached by the House of Representatives, which now seems virtually certain, he would then face trial in the Senate, which requires all senators be in the chamber whilst the charges are being considered. Democrats had briefly considered trying to delay an impeachment trial until the spring to buy Joe Biden more time without the cloud of such a proceeding hanging over the start of his presidency. But by late Monday, most felt they could not justify such a swift impeachment and then justify a delay. Still, the timing of the trial remained unclear because the Senate was not currently in session. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the top Democrat in the Senate, was considering trying to use emergency procedures to force the chamber back before 20th of January, a senior Democratic aide said, but doing so would take the consent of his Republican counterpart, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. House leaders said the timing and outcome of any Senate trial was secondary to their sense of urgency to charge President Donald Trump with crimes against the country. Whether impeachment can pass the United States Senate is not the issue, Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland, the majority leader in the House, told reporters. The issue is, we have a president who most of us believe participated in encouraging an insurrection and attack on this building and on democracy and trying to subvert the counting of the presidential ballot. Representative Tom Reed, Republican of New York, said House Republicans will introduce a measure on Tuesday, 12th of January, to censure Donald Trump and ensure accountability occurs without delay for the events of Wednesday, 6th of January. Writing an opinion editorial article published Monday night by the New York Times, Tom Reed, a Republican representative, added, "We must also look at alternatives that could allow Congress to bar Donald Trump from holding federal office in the future." Other accountability efforts were underway in the shadow of the drive to punish Donald Trump. Law enforcement fanned out across the country to track down and arrest members of the mob and heavily fortified the Capitol, where National Guard troops clad in camouflage uniforms roamed the ornate corridors and patrolled the sidewalks outside. Representative Tim Ryan of Ohio said the Capitol Police were investigating roughly a dozen of their own officers and had suspended two for potentially aiding the insurrectionists. One took selfies with those laying waste to the Capitol, another donned a Make America Great Again cap and potentially gave them directions, Mr. Ryan said. "Any incidents of Capitol Police facilitating or being part of what happened, we need to know that," Tim Ryan of Ohio said. Progressive lawmakers called for investigations and possible expulsions of Republicans who had supported Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the election and help stoke the violence. More moderate Democrats discussed plans to try to ostracize them going forward, including by refusing to sign onto their legislative efforts or routine requests because they were likely to remain in Congress. Republicans stoking the bogus claims of election theft themselves were mostly unapologetic and insisted their actions had nothing to do with the violence done in Donald Trump's name. The four-page impeachment article charges Donald Trump with inciting violence against the government of the United States when he sowed false claims about election fraud and encouraged his supporters at a rally outside the White House to take extraordinary measures to stop the counting of electoral votes underway at the Capitol building. A short time later, rioters mobbed the building, ransacking the seat of American government and killing a Capitol police officer. At least four others died as a result of injuries or medical emergencies on Capitol grounds. In all of this, President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government, the impeachment article read. He threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a co-equal branch of the government. He thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Modern presidential impeachments have been drawn-out affairs, allowing lawmakers to collect evidence, hone arguments, and hear the president's defense over the course of months. When the Democratic-led House impeached Donald Trump the first time, it took nearly 3 months, conducting dozens of witness interviews, compiling hundreds of pages of documents, and producing a detailed case in a written report which ran to 300 pages. It appeared this time round that the House planned to do so in less than a week, with little more evidence than the fast-accumulating public record of cell phone videos, photographs, police and journalistic accounts, and the words of Donald Trump himself. To those who would say, "Why do it now? There are only 9 days left in the president's term," said Joe Neguse of Colorado, who has been drafting messaging guidance for the party. "I would say there are 9 days in the president's term." Donald Trump's most outspoken defenders opposed impeachment, though most did not explicitly defend his conduct. Many of them, who just last week backed his drive to overturn Joe Biden's victory and voted to toss out legitimate results from key battleground states, argued that to impeach the president now would only further divide the country. Some moderate Democrats were growing uneasy about the implications of such fast and punitive action, fearful both of the consequences for Joe Biden's agenda during his first days in office and of further igniting violence across the country among Donald Trump's most extreme supporters. They tried to cobble together support for a bipartisan censure resolution instead, but it appeared it might be too late to stop the momentum in favor of impeachment. House Leader Nancy Pelosi shut down the idea during her private call with Democrats, saying that censure would be an abdication of our responsibilities, according to an official familiar with her remarks.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.